Good afternoon. Good Sabbath to you all. This has been a rather interesting beginning. I went through a little bit of a little poem, and none of you heard it except the ones in the room. And then I began to wax eloquent, I thought, and you didn't hear that either. So are you hearing it now, I hope? I hope that if you're plugged in, you're actually hearing something. According to the tech, what did the techies say? Are they hearing it?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Out there in the field, those of you who listen, you are listening live, some of you, and I love the idea that people are actually listening live. And I would love to see a lot more of you, or hear or know a lot more of you, were listening live. And someday we'll go to maybe a video where you can actually see what goes on here, though that may disillusion a lot of you, but you may actually get to see what goes on here. And no, I'm not in a swimsuit, if you're wondering. You know, we may allow you to see what goes on here if there's enough interest, enough people out there that want to hear it live. But I know a lot of you hear it later, and that's fine, too. And I made a big mistake last week. I tried to be nice. I said, if you have any questions, send them in. And I got deluged, and I'm out of my mind. No, I'm kidding. But I did get some input, and I appreciate it. I had several questions, and one of them kind of got me angry. And I suppose I shouldn't pick on anybody in particular. I don't mean the questioner, but somebody was hair splitting about one of the Ten Commandments, and he was hair splitting about it, trying to show how he wasn't violating it and so on. And I'm sorry that that goes on, but I mean, I don't want to single out anybody in particular. But I did get a lot of good questions, and I appreciate it, and I'll try to respond in a proper way, an appropriate way. So anyway, thanks again for your interest. I really appreciate it. And in one sense, it's related to what I'm going to talk about today. I said earlier, and I'll say it again, that the work of God goes in cycles. It has its ups and downs because God is dealing with people, imperfect people. And because of that, eventually human works peter out. They fail over time. And so God begins anew with another set of people. Sometimes there are a few who make the bridge to transition from one group to the other. But as God renews the work. But we do have a cycle in the Bible of renewal. And I've called this talk The Coming Renewal of God's Work. The Coming Renewal of God's Work. I would like to begin by saying that last week I talked about the ministry of John the Baptist. And that was a time of renewal. Things were coming to a head at that time in the church. And John the Baptist came, later on Jesus Christ performed his ministry, so the two of them were two witnesses, and in the end time, before Christ returns, there'll be two witnesses, one of whom will be very much like John the Baptist. So with that in mind, I wanted to begin by going to Revelation, the 10th chapter. This time of year is the period which is known as between the straits, the narrow time, the serious time, these 3 weeks. Ben Hametzarim, it's the time between the fast of the fourth month and the fast of the fifth month. All kinds of serious things happened. And right on cue, we have the tears being shed, no wonder. A lot of things happened. But this is a serious time of the year. If you're wanting to study seasonal readings, if you're wanting to get in the historical frame of mind of the season, I would recommend that you read the historical accounts in 2 Kings 25, Jeremiah 52, that you read the book of Lamentations, that you read the book of Leviticus, Psalm 148. These are relating to this season. Also the third book of Psalms, 73 to 89. We began our services today with praying from Psalm 73. So these are the seasonal readings that fit in with the history of the period. It doesn't mean you need to become a hermit or something. As I said, you know, just be aware that a lot of historical things happened of a very serious nature this time of the year, and be aware of that. But it doesn't mean you're supposed to sort of, ruin your summer, because we can be serious, but at the same time we can be hopeful. and optimistic because we know, as I said, that God will renew his plan. He will renew his work, and that's what I'm getting into today. In Revelation, the 10th chapter, we hear about the seven thunders. Seven thunders. And yet, when they're all over, the seven thunders have already been heard. We yet have a renewal of the work. This is the seventh verse of chapter 10 of Revelation. But in the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, when he is about to sound, the mystery of God should be finished as he declared to his servants the prophets. So the seventh angel completes a cycle. But that doesn't end the work. Then the voice which I heard from heaven spoke to me and said, Go, take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel who stands on the sea and on the earth. So I went to the angel and said to him, Give me the little book. And he said to me, Take and eat it, and it will make your stomach bitter, but it will be as sweet as honey in your mouth. So obviously what we say initially is good news, but then we have to warn people, unfortunately, before the good news, there's the bad news, because sin brings catastrophe. Catastrophe comes, and then finally God steps in and sets things right. Then I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it, and it was as sweet as honey in my mouth. But when I had eaten it, my stomach became bitter. Notice in verse 11 then, at the end of chapter 10 of Revelation. And he said to me, You must prophesy again about many peoples, nations, tongues, and kings. So you're going to have to go out to the world yet again. And then we have the two witnesses in Revelation 11. So what we see here is a renewal of the work. Even after the seven church eras conclude, we find this final push, this renewal of the work. And there's going to be a renewal of the work in our own day because, frankly, the Church of God, imperfectly, yes, flawed, yes, nevertheless, in some sense, was accomplishing a great deal for an extended period of time, was making an impact. At this point in time, that is not happening to any great degree that I can see. And so we in effect, are at a time when things have come to almost a close, a kind of silence. And once again, we are looking for a renewal. And that renewal will be there. That renewal will be there, as we see in history so often. If we read the Bible, we come to the end where it looks like everything is lost, and yet there is those few embers, those few remains of God's way of life. There's those eight people that he saved on the ark, and so on. There's the remnant through history. And then you have this great renewal and great revival and great impact, because God's work is eternal and his plan is going to succeed. I'd like to talk about the fact that when things came to a head at this time of year, anciently, when they did, God prepared the people for a renewal, even as he was about to punish them in a traumatic way that was as serious as could be. He nevertheless was preparing them for a renewal, and a renewal came. And that renewal was a foreshadowing of the great renewal that will yet come in God's plan, the millennium and the second coming of Christ and the restoration of all good. But there was a type of that that happened anciently, a renewal, a coming back from captivity of a part of God's people. But as you know, before that, at this time of year, great catastrophe occurred. But yet, at the same time, people were prepared for the renewal. So I wanted to talk about that today. At the time of the fall of Israel, of Judah, at the time of the fall of Jerusalem, the destruction of the Second Temple, there were some great biblical personalities, very impactful biblical personalities on the scene. And they set the stage for a renewal. Two of them were priests, Jeremiah and a younger contemporary, Ezekiel. And one was of the royal family of Judah, Daniel. And these men had extensive ministries over time. And two of them ministered also in exile. Even Jeremiah did to a degree. They ministered during the exile period. Jeremiah's career spanned the time from pre-exilic to post-exilic. But Daniel and Ezekiel were prophets in exile for God's people. Let's take a look first at Jeremiah, at his career. Before we do that, though, I want to go to something that he wrote in Lamentations. This is a very famous passage and it connects with what I wanted to talk about today, the concept that periodically in the church there's destruction and then renewal. You know, even at the time when we had the death of the leader of the church in my own lifetime, you know, they say Jews look for signs. They don't say it. There's a scripture on that. You know, the Jews look for a sign. And I was looking for a sign, and I saw a sign. It was interesting. Mr. Armstrong had died. And then in 1986, when he died, we had a new leader take over. And where do you think was the first place he took a trip? Well, he didn't decide, well, I want to give Mark Kaplan a sign, so where am I going to go? Mm-hmm. What he decided to do was go where his son was living at the time. But you know where that was? It was in Phoenix. So the first place that the leader of the church went was Phoenix. So I said, that's interesting. Does everybody know the significance of Phoenix? What is a Phoenix? The Phoenix is the mythological bird that rises up out of the ashes. You know, so I saw that as a sign. You know, the church was being revived. And there was that, there, you know, for a number of years, we had some interesting times. We accomplished a lot, you know, from 86 through the late 80s. And then things began, in my opinion, to deteriorate spiritually in the later 80s and early 90s. But we did have some interesting years in there and made some reforms that were certainly noteworthy at the time, learned some things. But anyway, we have these periods, and it was during that period, or actually perhaps shortly thereafter, that I was at Fuller Theological Seminary with a couple of friends. I wasn't attending there, but I was just happened to be there hanging out in the cafeteria with a couple of friends. I'll even name them, Jim Hurst and Tim Finley. So Jim Hurst, Tim Finley, and I were hanging out in the cafeteria at the Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena, and we saw there's a man sitting there wearing a kippah. Now, how many times are you going to see a man in Fuller Theological Seminary cafeteria wearing a yarmulke? That's not, you don't expect that to happen very often. But in this case, he was a, I think, so-called rabbi of the Messianic Jewish movement, and it seemed, as I recall, he was a major mover and shaker in that movement, somebody who's composed a lot of the music that they use. And he talked to me about a movement he was trying to organize based around the scripture I'm going to read. And the movement was, you know, Restore Us, O Eternal, Turn Us Back. You know, Hashivenu was the name of his movement. Now, maybe some of you have been exposed to it. You know, maybe some of you are even in it. I don't know. But he was trying to start this Hashivenu movement, you know, Turn Us Back. And let's go to Lamentations, the fifth chapter. As we come to the climax of this book of Lamentations, which foreshadows the great tribulation before Christ's return, we have this verse that any Jew who goes to synagogue is familiar with, as they sing this verse in synagogue. Hashivenu Adonai Elecha v'nashuva chadei shamenu kekedem. Anybody who's ever gone to synagogue has heard the song. Hashivenu Adonai Elecha v'nashuva. I guess I won't sing it any further. People will shut me down. Anyway, verse 21. Turn us back to you, O Eternal, and we will be turned, and we will be restored. Renew our days as of old. And so there was this prayer for renewal. And in fact, God intends to renew his plan, and he intends to renew his work. So let's look what he wrote to Jeremiah. In the first chapter of Jeremiah, as he gave Jeremiah his calling and told him what his responsibilities were going to be. Jeremiah was going to oversee the destruction of his people, but also the renewal of his people and the continuation of God's plan. You know, I wish everybody in this room were as attentive as Gideon. He really pays attention to me. Anyway, well, I'm grooming him to eventually pastor this group, so. All right, anyway. In Jeremiah 1 and verse 10, God says to Jeremiah, "See, I have this day set you over the nations and over the kingdoms to root out and pull down, to destroy and throw down." Yes, Jeremiah was going to oversee that. "To build and to plant." That's also what he was going to do. He wasn't just going to be there for the destruction. He was going to be there for the renewal. And he did that in so many ways, and I don't have time to get into all of it today. But one thing he did, Gideon and the rest of you, one thing he did was to renew the immediate community, the Jews who were going to go into captivity, the people of Judah and Jerusalem, the capital. He renewed, he prepared the ground for them to come back within a reasonable period of time. Yes, they were going to be destroyed and in exile, scattered, But then they were going to return within a reasonable period of time, within a generation. And he encouraged them. And he said, yes, you know, you've earned a punishment and it's coming, but God isn't going to wipe his hands of you. So let's go to Jeremiah 25. In the 25th chapter of Jeremiah, verse 8, therefore thus says the Eternal of Hosts, Jeremiah 25:8, because you have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, says the Eternal, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land, against its inhabitants, against these nations all around. So not just the Jews suffered, but other nations around, and will utterly destroy them and make them an astonishment, a hissing and perpetual desolations, you know, for an extended period of time. And some of those countries never really recovered. But then, as we go further, look at verse 12, I'm sorry, verse 11, and this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Then it will come to pass when 70 years are completed that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, the land of the Chaldeans, for their iniquity, says the Eternal, and I will make it a perpetual desolation. So ultimately, Babylon is going to suffer that fate. And to this day, well, you know, what is Babylon today? It ultimately was reduced to just nothing. Nobody lives in that city now. It's there, you know, the ruins are there for archaeologists to study, but it's not a populated city over there in Iraq. And so you see that the judgment was coming, and God already told the people there'd be a 70-year period. So he prepared that prepared them ahead of time for a renewal. And in Jeremiah 29, here a letter is sent to people already in exile. The exile happened in stages. Daniel was already in exile as a young man, virtually a boy, when Jeremiah was prophesying. And later on, Ezekiel was taken into exile after Daniel. And he was in exile when Jerusalem fell. When Jerusalem fell, Ezekiel was not there. He was already in exile. The exile happened in stages. And here a letter is sent from Jeremiah to those in exile. And there's some good advice here that Jews have carried with them over the centuries, wherever they have gone. And, you know, even in Jewish history, we've had a renewal of sorts in recent years that's been really profound. If you think about the condition of Jewry in 1945, they had just had two-thirds of European Jewry exterminated in a short period of time, one-third of the entire people. And yet 3 years later, just 3 years later, they had a state of their own after 19 centuries. They had a state of their own. And it's interesting, if you see the movie Fiddler on the Roof, this is the way the average Jew was living around, let's say, 1880. And project that forward. And where are those people who were there in Anatevka? They're in Beverly Hills. They're in Miami Beach. They're on Park Avenue. And the very great grandchildren of those people, you know, in a sense, it is amazing. And so that's the way history has gone. You know, the ups and the downs, the destruction and the renewal. Now I'm generalizing. I understand. You know, I'm generalizing. I'm not talking about every last person, but I'm just making a point. In Jeremiah 29, thus says the Eternal of Hosts, the God of Israel, to all who were carried away captive, whom I have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and dwell in them, plant gardens and eat their fruit. In other words, be normal. Don't go loony. You know, I realize that this is not the world that we would like to see. You know, we're in a sense in a spiritual exile. But that doesn't mean we're supposed to be fruitcakes. You know, try to be normal. Try to be balanced. Enjoy life as you can. Make the best of the situation. Don't become a fanatic. Build houses and dwell in them. Plant gardens and eat their fruit. Take wives and beget sons and daughters. And take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands so that they may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased there and not diminished. In other words, continue to cling to life. Continue to survive even in exile. You can thrive in exile even. It's not. You have to realize while you're thriving, it's temporary. Eventually, your host people will turn on you. They'll get envious. You know. But in the meantime, do as best you can. And seek the peace of the city where I have caused you to be carried away captive. You know, have a certain loyalty to where you're from, and wish. And you know, because its well-being is your well-being. In other words, a Christian should be a good citizen of his nation. And seek the peace of the city where I have caused you to be carried away captive. And pray to the Eternal for it, for in its peace you will have peace. For thus, and there are false prophets who will tell you something different. And he says, ignore them. Read the Bible and ignore these false prophets. You know, for thus says the Eternal of Hosts, the God of Israel, do not let your prophets and your diviners who are in your midst deceive you, nor listen to your dreams which you cause to be dreamed. You know, don't go by your own notions or those of these people who are not biblically grounded, not grounded in Scripture. For they prophesy falsely to you in my name. I have not sent them, says the Eternal. All right, let's jump ahead now to verse 10. For thus says the Eternal, after 70 years are completed, so everybody knew, if they were informed by Jeremiah, that the captivity would last 70 years. Roughly, we're talking about 609 B.C. to 539 B.C. For thus says the Eternal, after 70 years are completed at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good work toward you and cause you to return to this place. You know, so he said that there would be a restoration to the land after 70 years. And so even before the captivity, he already told people, he gave them a limit as to when it would come to an end. So the encouragement is there. Now, with that in mind, a couple of other related points. Jeremiah even went a step further. You know what they say, if you don't like the message, kill the messenger. Jeremiah told the truth. It got him imprisoned. And, you know, it was the occupying Gentile nation that let him out. They respected him. They let him out of prison and told him he could go wherever he wanted to go. And, you know, they would protect him. But his own leader, King Zedekiah, had him imprisoned. And yet, what did he do when he was in prison? In Jeremiah 32, he bought a field. He took the trouble to buy a field. Why? He was showing his faith that his people would return to that land, that his descendants would be able to benefit from that field. And verse 6, he had a special messenger come to him. God was inspiring this event. I'm in Jeremiah 32:6. And Jeremiah said, the word of the Eternal came to me, saying, behold, Hanamel, the son of Shallum, your uncle, will come to you, saying, buy my field, which is in Anathoth, for the right of redemption is yours to buy it. He came from Anathoth, a city in Benjamin. He was a priest, but the priest had 13 cities, one in Simeon, and then most of them in Judah, and then at least one, Anathoth, was in Benjamin. You know, so he was a priest but within Benjamin. And Anathoth was his hometown. It's near Jerusalem. You know, the priests were all given areas not that far from Jerusalem, where later on they were going to serve. They were given 13 cities in that region around Jerusalem. Buy my field, which is in Anathoth, for the right of redemption is yours to buy it. And Hanamel, my uncle's son, came to see me in the court of the prison, according to the word of the Eternal, said to me, please buy my field that is in Anathoth, which is in the country of Benjamin, for the right of inheritance is yours, and the redemption yours. Buy it for yourself. Then I knew that this was the word of the Eternal. God had told him ahead of time it was going to happen, and so he knew he should do it. I mean, obviously, it's not a logical thing to do. Your country's about to be occupied by a foreign power. Your city's about to be destroyed. So what's the best thing to do? Go buy land? That doesn't make any sense. The best thing to do is to sell the land, get the money, and get out of there, right? Of course, he couldn't get out of there. He was in prison. But at least get the land and pocket the money. The land's not going to do you any good when the occupier comes in. So you going to care about whose land it was? But yet, he bought it because he knew that his people were coming back. So I bought the field from Hanamel, the son of my uncle, who was in Anathoth, and weighed out to him the money, 17 shekels of silver. And I signed the deed and sealed it, took witnesses, and weighed the money on the scales. It was an official transaction. It was duly done. The price was given, everything, right down the line. So I took the purchase deed, both that which was sealed according to the law and custom, and that which was open. Evidently, there was one deed that was supposed to be kept sealed that you could maybe refer to later, and one that was available. And I gave the purchase deed to Baruch, the son of Neriah, son of Maaseiah, in the presence of Hanamel, my uncle's son. You may remember Baruch was his scribe. And in the presence of the witnesses who signed the purchase deed, before all the Jews who sat in the court of the prison. So several people saw this. And they must have thought, what is he, crazy? If he thinks we're going to go under, why is he buying the land? Then I charged Baruch before them, saying, thus says the Eternal of Hosts, the God of Israel, take these deeds, both the purchase deed which is sealed, and this deed which is open, and put them in an earthen vessel, that they may last many days. For thus says the Eternal of Hosts, the God of Israel, houses and fields and vineyards shall be possessed again in this land. What an encouraging proposition. And here he's doing it from prison. Verse 26. Then the word of the Eternal came to Jeremiah, saying, behold, I am the Eternal, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Therefore thus says the Eternal, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the Chaldeans, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take it. And the Chaldeans who fight against the city shall come and set fire to the city and burn it. And these things happen at this time of the year. You know, beginning with events that happened about a week ago historically and continue on to the end of this month. With the houses and burn it, with the houses on whose roofs they have offered incense to Baal and poured out drink offerings to other gods to provoke me to anger. Because the children of Israel and the children of Judah have done evil before me from their youth. For the children of Israel have provoked me only to anger with the work of their hands, says the Eternal. And he goes on at quite some length about that. But let's continue to the end of the chapter, verse 42. Now let me just make a comment. I to some degree watch the culture, as some of you do, and it is really appalling, the kind of things that happen. And of course we only know once in a while when some dramatic thing comes up because somebody important or famous is involved. But it's just really sad, a lot of the things that are happening, and how, you know, just like, for example, older people being abused, children being abused, spouse abuse of wives and husbands by one another, and people preying on each other economically. You know what just happened recently outside of Chicago. There were people that were digging up bodies, and then they were reselling the graves, and you know, I mean, preying on their own people. You know, it's of course it's bad to take advantage of anybody, but you can almost understand how you might want to take advantage of somebody who's not your own kind. But these are people preying on their own kind, and you know, anyway, it's very sad, and on it goes. And these things just can't go on and on before there's judgment. There is judgment for these kinds of things. I'm not picking on those individuals. I'm saying this is the way society is going overall. It's an environment that we're in, a kind of predatory environment, unfortunately, all too often. For thus says the Eternal, just as I have brought all this great calamity on this people, so I will bring on them all the good that I promised them. See, that's also in the Bible. The punishment is talked about, but also the ultimate restoration. And the fields will be bought in this land of which you say it is desolate, without man or beast. It has been given into the hand of the Chaldeans. Verse 44, men will buy fields for money, sign deeds and seal them, and take witnesses in the land of Benjamin, in the places around Jerusalem, in the cities of Judah. And all over that land, he mentions, in the cities of the mountains, in the cities of the lowland, and in the cities of the south. And I will cause their captives to return, says the Eternal. So that promise is there, the promise of renewal. You know, God himself renewed the entire earth when the spirit beings, Satan and his demons, rebelled and sinned, and the earth of the past was in effect flooded out. God then renewed the earth and prepared it for our ancestors, Adam and Eve. This is a new world. This is not the world of the mastodon and the mammoth. You know, and I know what you've seen in the movies, but so far we haven't been able to clone these critters. You know, this is not the world of these kinds of creatures, saber-toothed tigers and all the rest of it. This is not the world of Cro-Magnon and of their Neanderthal man or Cro-Magnon man. Am I saying that those Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon were pre-Adamic? Yes, I am, which means I guess I'm not a fundamentalist. But God renewed the earth for our ancestors, Adam and Eve. And look at Psalm 104. This is a psalm that Jews recite on the new moon, reminding themselves of the renewal of life each month, the renewal of the moon, how it becomes full and then wanes, and then waxes again, and so on. Psalm 104, and verse 29. You hide your face, and they are troubled. Psalm 104:29. You hide your face and they are troubled. You take away their breath, they die and return to their dust. You send forth your spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the earth. You know, this is what God does. This is what He has done. The world before man was washed away. And then from that flooded world, from the abyss, He renewed the world in 6 days for Adam and Eve, our ancestors. So anyway, going back to this time of catastrophe and renewal, Jeremiah talked about it. And meantime, out in the exile was Ezekiel. And let's talk now about Ezekiel. He's taken into captivity in 598. And we come now to Ezekiel. If you don't mind going to the beginning of Ezekiel. Now it came to pass in the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river Kebar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth day of the month, which was in the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. I believe this 30th year is taking us back to the time of Josiah's reforms. And now we have 30 years after that. You know, by that time, his reforms, of course, had not, prevented the ultimate destruction of that nation. And within about a decade later, there was a 40-year period of judgment upon Judah. And by the end of that period, Judah disappeared as an entity on a map. There was no Judah on the map within 40 years of Josiah's reforms. But anyway, we're now on the fifth day of the month, which is the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. Yeah, I want to apologize. The captivity we're talking about is King Jehoiakim. He was taken captive in 598. Ezekiel was taken captive a year later, 597, I believe. Anyway, the word of the Eternal came expressly to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans. See, he's already in captivity in Iraq when he gets these visions. By the river Kebar, and the hand of the Eternal was upon him there. Now, Ezekiel did a lot of dramatic things, which gave him a reputation. People knew about him. And one of the amazing things that happened to him was that he couldn't speak until God inspired him. Then he would say these very powerful things, but otherwise he couldn't just interact with people. He couldn't verbally. You know, God had made him a special case. If you look at the end of the third chapter, okay, let's go to chapter 3, verse 26. I will make your tongue cling to the roof of your mouth, 3:26, so that you shall be mute and not be one to rebuke them, for they are a rebellious house. But when I speak with you, I will open your mouth, and you shall say to them, thus says the Lord the Eternal, he who hears, let him hear, and he who refuses, let him refuse, for they are a rebellious house. You know, you're going to make your bed, you're going to have to lie in it. But Ezekiel's going to tell you my word when I inspire him. Otherwise, he's not even going to be able to talk. Now, this went on for quite some time, until the destruction of Jerusalem. Then a messenger came to Ezekiel and reported it, and at that time God told him, when that happens, you will be able to speak again. At the end of Ezekiel 24, verse 25, and you, son of man, will it not be in the day when I take from them their stronghold, their joy and their glory, the desire of their eyes, that on which they set their minds, their sons and their daughters? Their own children, unfortunately, are going to die in this captivity. On that day, one who escapes will come to you, Ezekiel 24:26, to let you hear it with your ears. On that day, your mouth will be open to him who has escaped. You shall speak and no longer be mute. Thus you will be assigned to them, and they shall know that I am the Eternal. That phrase occurs time after time in the book. And they shall know that I am the Eternal. But Ezekiel, if you read the book, prophesied about restoration of the people, and even went way into the future about a perfect restoration, a wonderful world, what we call the world tomorrow. But in the meantime, he had to hear about the fall of Jerusalem. If you go to Ezekiel 33, and it came to pass in the 12th year of our captivity, so now we're talking about Ezekiel's own captivity, which was, this is in the 12th year of that, of the captivity of Ezekiel. trying to add, you know, in my mind, to come up with it. So the temple fell in 587, which was in the 12th year of his captivity, 12th year of Ezekiel's captivity, because it says our captivity, not the captivity of the king, but the captivity of those who were taken with Ezekiel. In the 12th year of that captivity, and in this case we're talking about the year 587, and it came to pass in the 12th year of our captivity, the 10th month, on the 5th day of the month, this is around the time of what we would call January, so it would be maybe January of 588, perhaps. I'm sorry, wrong, 586, because, you know, you go backwards, you're going towards zero, so 586, all right? In the 10th month, on the 5th day of the month, that one who had escaped from Jerusalem came to me and said, the city has been captured. So he heard the word that Jerusalem had fallen, even though he was in captivity and didn't experience it. Now the hand of the Eternal had been upon me the evening before the man came who had escaped, and he had opened my mouth. So when he came to me in the morning, my mouth was open, and I was no longer mute. And so now he was able to speak freely, and he, of course, continued to prophesy. But his prophecies also spoke of great restoration. And if you keep reading in Ezekiel 36... you know, it's interesting. If I go to verse 16, you know what my Bible calls this? I mean, I have a Bible which has comments with it. It's a useful Bible. I don't agree with every comment, but it's a very useful Bible. In fact, it was written by a scholar who has a seminary near where I used to live. I used to live in a place called Sunland, near Tahunga, the Sunland-Tahunga area, which is a relatively rural part of Los Angeles. You wouldn't think you're in Los Angeles when you're there. It's kind of almost rural in its environment, and anyway, nearby is an area called Sun Valley, as you head towards Burbank, and Sun Valley has a seminary, and the leader there, the main spiritual leader, was a man named John MacArthur, and I happen to have John MacArthur's study Bible. I think he's still alive and maybe operating still in Sun Valley. I presume so. But anyway, he has labeled this passage the renewal of Israel. And that's what I'm talking about today, the renewal of God's work. So here Ezekiel says in verse 16 of Ezekiel 36, moreover, the word of the Eternal came to me, saying, son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own ways and deeds. To me, their way was like the uncleanness of a woman in her customary impurity. It was, you know, it's like... when a woman is spiritually, ritually, not able to go into the temple because she's bleeding, and she has to wait till that ends before she can go into the altar. So Israel was in that kind of state of being, you know, unclean. But their uncleanness was of a much worse sort, you know, morally unclean. But as he continues going on, he says in verse 24, for I will take you from among the nations, gather you out of all countries, and bring you into your own land. Then I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you shall be clean, and I will cleanse you from all your filthiness, from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I'm going to make mention out of you, to use Yiddish. I'm going to make you into real people, good people. Now, ultimately, that's not fulfilled really until the far future, but it was partially fulfilled at the time of after Ezekiel's life, when they did return to the land, and there was a spiritual revival. Some of them did have the courage to go back and rebuild, and even rebuild build the second temple. So there was at least a partial fulfillment of Ezekiel's prophecy, and there was that renewal. So Ezekiel had a hand in bringing it about by his ministry. Jeremiah had a hand in bringing it about by his ministry, and another great personality had a hand in bringing it about by his ministry, and that was Daniel. Now Daniel operated in a secular realm. He was at the headquarters of the empire in Chaldea. He was ruling in a secular way. He was from the nobility, from the house of Judah. He was not a priest, and he was operating as an advisor to the king. But he had a very important role to play. And he was also, as I said, in exile, but at the same time preserving God's religion in exile and in exhorting God's people, setting a wonderful example. And in Daniel 9, as Babylon fell, and now Daniel is under the Persian Empire, and he knows the period ought to be ending. He knew, Jeremiah said, that when Babylon fell, God's people would be restored. So Daniel and Daniel 9, we're now in 539, and 539 to 538, the first year when Cyrus takes over as head of the Medo-Persian Empire, and Babylon is occupied by the Persians, and now the Jews should be going home. Speaking of going home, the time is going, isn't it? All right, anyway, Daniel 9. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus of the lineage of the Medes, who was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans. Now, this is a ruler under Cyrus. This isn't Cyrus. It's a ruler under Cyrus. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by the books the number of the years specified by the word of the Eternal through Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. So he prayed about it. He said, the time has come, hasn't it? And he admitted their faults. You should read this prayer. He admitted their faults and what had gone wrong. But then he said, yes, I know. We blew it. We suffered. But now the time has come to restore, to renew. Then I set my face toward the Lord Eternal to make requests by prayer and supplications with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. And I prayed to the Eternal my God and made a confession and said, O Lord, great and awesome God who keeps his covenant and mercy with those who love him and with those who keep his commandments. And there were those who did, as Daniel, as Ezekiel, as Jeremiah. You know, there were those who did, as the three young men, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. You know, they were commandment keepers. They were setting the example. There were the remnant who stayed faithful. And God, of course, was going to stay faithful. And so at the end of the prayer, let's go to verse 19. Oh, Lord, hear. Oh, Lord, forgive. Oh, Lord, listen and act. Do not delay for your own sake, my God, for your city and your people are called by your name. And God responded. And soon after, Cyrus made a decree. He said, I'm in charge now, and I'm allowing the Jews to go home and to build their temple, to rebuild their capital. So let's go to to Second Chronicles, the last page of Second Chronicles. Let's go to Second Chronicles 36, and we have the whole summary of how Judah sinned and was punished. And then we finally come to the part, verse 20. Of Second Chronicles 36. All right, Second Chronicles 36:20. And those who escaped from the sword he carried away to Babylon, where they became servants to him and his sons until the rule of the kingdom of Persia. So Nebuchadnezzar carried the Jews away captive, but then Cyrus came to fulfill the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah. Oh, remember? We read about it earlier, if you were paying attention. There'll be a pop quiz afterwards. No, I'm sure you knew. To fulfill the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land enjoyed her Sabbaths. As long as she lay desolate, she kept the Sabbath. She kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. Oh, okay. You know, remember, there's a rest of the land as well as a rest of people. The rest of the land is every seventh year. So there were 70 years where the land rested in that sense. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled. The Eternal stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia. Now, this is an important thing to know. God can work with a person by stirring up his spirit. God is spirit, and he can work with our minds. He can influence us that way. So if there's somebody that maybe is let's say, in some way grumpy with you or maybe hostile to you, then pray that God would work with that individual and stir up the spirit of that person to be more favorably inclined to you. You know, God will do that. I mean, he doesn't have to, but I'm saying he will. You know, it's obviously up to him, but he certainly will. And so it's something to pray about. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Eternal stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and also put it in writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth the Eternal God of heaven has given me, and he has commanded me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Now, it may be that he saw the prophecies of Isaiah, identifying him by name ahead of time. Josephus believes that he was actually shown those prophecies. Who is among you of all his people? May the Eternal his God be with him, and let him go up. And now, if you keep reading in your King James translation, or hopefully New King James, or NRSV, or RS, or IS, I'm sorry, not NIV, that's what I'm thinking of, NIV, not IV, you know, but NIV. Hopefully you're not in the hospital listening to this. If you are, I wish you a speedy recovery. All right, but anyway, let's go on to Ezra now. And Ezra shows how there was this renewal How some people said, yes, we'll do it, we'll go back. It's not going to be easy, but we'll do it, we'll go back. So I'm going to read Cyrus's decree in Ezra, where it leaves off. Verse 3 of Ezra 1. This is Cyrus's decree. Who is among you of all his people? May his God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the eternal God of Israel. He is God, which is in Jerusalem. And whoever is left in any place where he dwells, let the men of the place help him with the silver and gold. If you can't go, then help out financially. With goods and livestock, besides the freewill offerings for the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. Then the heads of the fathers' houses of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, with all whose spirits God had moved, arose to go up and build the house of the eternal, which is in Jerusalem. So some did go, and others helped them out. You know, and all those who were around them encouraged them with articles of silver and gold, with goods and livestock, and with precious things, besides all that was willingly offered. So this happened. There was a return. There was a renewal. And it went on for many centuries. Unfortunately, though, again, things deteriorated. There was another catastrophe in 70 A.D. So that temple was destroyed. But let's first talk about the rebuilding of that temple in Ezra 3. Here we see that when they came back in Ezra 3, under Zerubbabel and Joshua, they did begin sacrificing, and they began building the temple. And, you know, when they built the temple, some people had been around for the first temple. They were old enough to remember the first temple. And they were very depressed because, you know, they had this beautiful temple. Look what they have now. They're just getting started on this new one. And, you know, look what they have, just a pittance of what they once had. But the young people were excited. Wow, you know, we're building the temple finally, and so on. So there were people laughing and crying. You know, those people were crying over what they had. And then there were the young people who were very excited about what's new. You know what they say about nostalgia? It's not what it used to be. Anyway, let's go to Ezra 3. But many of the priests and Levites and heads of the fathers' houses, old men who had seen the first temple, wept with a loud voice when the foundation of this temple was laid before their eyes. Yet many shouted aloud for joy, so that the people could not discern the noise of the shout of joy from the noise of the weeping of the people. For the people shouted with a loud shout, and the sound was heard afar off. But you know what? That second temple finally exceeded Solomon's, because Herod embellished it. And it became beautiful, and you've seen the models of it. The Holy Land Hotel in Israel had a scale model, and now here in Orlando we have a scale model over in a religious theme park, if you can believe that. And then you may have seen it elsewhere, but it was a beautiful temple that Herod built. He took 46 years, actually 49 altogether, embellishing that temple. And Christ himself walked into that temple. Could you imagine? God himself walked into that second temple. So, yes, it started small, but it became greater than the first. And that's what God told the people in Haggai. So let's jump over to Haggai in the Minor Prophets. Haggai comes later now. Took a long time till that second temple was finished. And by the time they finished it, you know, they did it under the influence of Haggai and Zechariah. So now we go farther along in history. From that period, we come now to the 520s, the time of King Darius of Persia. And we come to the time when they finally finished that second temple. And here's what God said to them. Verse 3. This is verse 3 of Haggai 2. Who is left among you who saw the temple in its former glory? You know, there were still some alive maybe even then who had known about that first temple. Let me think about that. They would have been old, but they could have remembered it. It's possible. There would have been old people around who remembered that first temple. And how do you see it now in comparison with it? Is this not in your eyes as nothing? Yet now be strong, Zerubbabel, says the Eternal, and be strong, Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and be strong, all you people of the land, says the Eternal, and work, for I am with you, says the Eternal of hosts. So God is renewing his work. According to the word that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, so my spirit remains with you. Do not fear, for this says the Eternal of hosts, once more it is a little while, I will shake heaven and earth, the sea and dry land. You know, so there was, of course, a shaking historically when the Persian Empire came to an end and the Greco-Macedonian Empire took over. But then even beyond that, from God's perspective, you know, in just a short time from the overview of history's perspective, of course, will come the climax of human history. And I will shake all nations, and they shall come to the desire of all nations. In other words, the coming Messiah. And I will fill this temple with glory, says the Eternal of Hosts, because Christ came to that temple. He walked in the door. You know. Now later on, he will come to his church. The temple was a type of the church, and he will come to his church. And then there will be a third temple. In the millennium, there will be a third temple. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, says the Eternal of Hosts. Verse 9, the glory of this latter temple shall be greater than the former, says the Eternal of Hosts. So hang in there. Do what you can. Don't be upset if your beginning is just a small beginning. It is going to bear fruit. And in this place I will give peace, says the Eternal of Hosts. As I said, Herod built a beautiful temple, and Jesus Christ walked into that temple so that the second temple was greater than the first. And besides that, the spiritual temple will, of course, exceed any physical temple. So you see that God, through history, has renewed his work all through history. There's been the catastrophes coming about through human sin, but God still has his plan. So he lets the axe fall, as it were. He lets the punishment occur, but then he renews, and the work proceeds, and the work continues, and it grows and it flourishes. I'd like to go to Matthew 9. I am drawing to a conclusion. In Matthew 9, we see that part of this renewal has to be a renewal of God's people, a spiritual renewal. If the work of God comes under has difficulties, in many cases those difficulties are because of our own problems that we're bringing on. In Matthew 9 and verse 14, then the disciples of John came to him, saying, came to Christ. This is something I talked about, by the way, last week, but I'm tying it in. Because John the Baptist was the end, in a way, of the Old Covenant period. He was trying to get people to come back on track according to Old Covenant principles. But Christ was now bringing the New Covenant, and he was telling people that they need to have a renewal inside, a spiritual rebirth. As God was renewing his work, each individual was going to have to be renewed to be a part of it. Why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples do not fast? That's verse 14. And Jesus said to them, can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast. He says, my people are going to fast when I'm not here anymore. And then he tells them something interesting, because this is the time when he's bringing the new covenant. He tells them, you're going to need to be changed inside. You can't really be my follower and be the old person you were. You got to be changed. No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment, and the tear is made worse. You can't mix the old and the new. You've got to start over. Nor do they put new wine into old wineskins. That won't work. Or else the wineskins break. The wine is spilled, and the wineskins are ruined. But they put new wine into new wineskins, and both are preserved. So he says, if you're going to accept what I teach, you've got to be a new person. So you've got to be renewed spiritually. So what I'm saying is this. As God's work right now, in effect, is in a period it has slid to a certain level, and we're now perhaps at the time when we're expecting a renewal, a rebirth, we first have to work on ourselves and make sure that we are part of the solution, not part of the problem, that we are renewing ourselves, preparing for that time, that we can be a transition into that time when the work of God is renewed, that we can be vessels that he can make use of in helping to bring that about, as Jeremiah was one who brought it, helped bring it about, as Ezekiel helped to bring it about, as Daniel helped to bring it about, as John the Baptist helped to bring it about. So do we need to be the kind of people that can help to bring it about. Now I realize that I'm speaking to spiritual giants who have no flaws to overcome. So obviously, I don't know, who am I talking to? No, I'm joking. So all of us need to work on ourselves, with God's help, so that we can be renewed and we can prepare for a renewal then of the work of God. I'd like to go on now to finish by going to the book of Revelation. God has promised, as you have seen from the Bible, that he is a God who renews, that he lets calamities occur to the work, but then he renews the work. And the renewal often will exceed what happened before, because he's heading in a forward direction. Ultimately, things are going to all work in a positive direction. So I would like to go to Revelation 21 and read a very powerful promise at the end of the Bible. Revelation 21. Then he who sat on the throne said, "Behold, I make all things new." And he said to me, "Write, for these things are true and faithful." So God, who makes all things new, is going to renew the work of God. We need to continually renewing ourselves so that we can be a part of a forward motion and perhaps a basis for the renewal of God's work. There is coming a renewal of the work of God. Well, thanks for listening. We had some technical difficulties in the beginning, but evidently things have worked out well after those first few moments. So thanks for listening, those of you who have, and for those of you who hear this later on, we appreciate the fact that you're listening. We certainly appreciate the input we're getting, the questions and comments that we're getting. Some of you, or at least one of our people, has had a health problem and asked for an anointed cloth, so we hope that all is well in your case now, and we wish all of you a wonderful Sabbath, and also the rest of the week can go very well for you, or the new week, rather, can go very well for you. All the best to you and yours.